Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the ACE CPT exam. We are here today to go over chapter 15, specifically the chapter 15 PowerPoint lecture. So let's go ahead and get started. Chapter 15 is all about understanding different injuries associated with the body and how those injuries might affect fitness and basically what those injuries consist of. So really just looking here to understand how some of your future injured clients might work out safely and effectively without continuing to or without aggravating that injury further. So let's go ahead and move over to slide number 2 as we talk about tissues and common injuries. So one of the more common injuries associated with the muscular system is a muscular strain. A strain specifically refers to the type of tissue, which is muscle. A sprain, you may hear, as we continue this lecture, you'll hear is related to ligaments and or a connective tissue. But muscle strains are basically going to be microscopic tears of the muscle fibers. And they are in a grading system, a grade 1 strain, grade 2, and grade 3. Obviously, as you get higher in number, the strains get more severe. But grade 1 strain is going to be just a mild strain, just a little bit of pain, tender, that sort of thing, maybe some spasms, but no major disability from that pain. Those typically heal within a week or two, and some minor foam rolling and stretching can assist in breaking up some of the minor scar tissue that forms. A grade 2 strain or a moderate strain, a large number of fibers are actually injured and or separated, and a lot more severe pain and tenderness. Mild swelling, maybe some bruising looking, but it's not going to be a complete tear. There is a decent amount of loss of function in the sense that the muscle is not as usable as well. So with the grade 3 strain, you get a complete tear of the muscle, meaning all of the fibers of the muscle are separated and the muscle is in half, we'll say, or there's a complete tear. You get zero muscle function or a complete loss of muscle function, very severe pain, swelling, bruising, tenderness, discoloration, and a palpable defect. Yeah, that's very, very painful to completely tear the muscle off or apart, we'll say. Very not as common, though, as it is a very severe strain. Anyways, moving over to slide 3 as we talk about tissues and common injuries further. Hamstring strains are probably the most common, okay, specifically in running and jumping sports. The risk factors that lead to more hamstring strains or that lead to the hamstring strains in general include poor flexibility, poor posture, muscle imbalances, and improper warm-up, and then other training errors. A proper warm-up is going to be very important, especially for the high-level athletes that are doing a lot of sprints and often. Also, hip strains, typically things like hip flexor strains is what mainly I would say is most common in the sense of the front of the anterior portion of the hip is going to have a strain that leads to pain during running or walking, things like that. But very common in explosive sports that require high acceleration, because you're really whipping that hip backwards, and then also deceleration and or change of direction, lateral movements. So some risk factors are, once again, muscle imbalances, hip abductors and adductors, one might be tighter and one might be weaker. Typically the adductors, the inner thighs, are tighter and not strong enough outer hip muscles to maintain balance. So that's a common risk factor. And then finally, we have calf strains. Calf strains are definitely common in running and jumping athletes. Some of the risk factors might be things like muscular fatigue, like tiredness, fluid and electrolyte depletion, forced knee extension while the foot is dorsiflexed. So kind of like that would also hurt the ACL, but that can strain the calf. And then forced dorsiflexion while the knee is extended as well. So, let's go ahead and move on to slide number 4 as we talk further about common injuries. Ligament sprains. Remember, the difference between a strain and a sprain is what type of tissue it is to. A sprain is for a ligament or connective tissue, or non-contractile connective tissue, but mainly ligaments. You know, an ankle sprain is a damage to the ligaments of the ankle. That's what we'll say. The grading system also is here, very similar to the muscular system, but grade one, minimal tenderness, swelling and impairment, a micro tearing of collagen fibers. When it's ligaments, they don't have as good a blood flow, so the recovery times are typically a little bit longer, in that maybe 2 to 4 weeks for a grade one. Grade two can be, you know, up to six months, and then grade three can even be, you know, 18 total months of heal time, depending on how severe, or you might even need surgery on that. But yeah, how do you care for this sort of issue? RICE, rest, ice, compress, and elevate. RICE is the acronym. And grade two, we're looking at more moderate tenderness, swelling, and impairment, decreased range of motion, instability. There are a complete tear of some of the collagen fibers. I tore my ACL about 2 years ago and overextended my knee, and I had a grade two sprain. Basically, the guy said that my ACL was exactly half of the ligamentous fibers were in two pieces, or sorry, were split. So I tore my ACL, but it wasn't a complete tear, which typically requires surgery. So I was able to rehab it through resting for the first bit and then strengthening the muscles around my knee. And now I'm very, very, very happy to say it's pretty much 100%, probably 98 to 100%. Most ACLs do take about anywhere from 12 to 18 months to heal. So pretty good as far as the understanding of grade two sprain there. But yeah, the care for a grade two ligament sprain is definitely, once again, RICE. And then physical evaluation. Sometimes grade two sprains might require surgery, but if it's not completely gone, there's a pretty good chance that you won't need surgery. But grade two to grade three could be very possible. So get an X-ray, get an MRI to determine the amount of damage. And then grade three, major swelling and tenderness, a severe impairment, instability. It's typically a complete tear or rupture of the ligament. The ACL pops off the bone, more or less. And how do you care for that? Immobilization, splint, RICE, and definitely go to a doctor, because most likely you will be needing surgery. But yeah, surgeries for ACLs have come a long way in the last 20, 30 years. And you know, guys, it's almost better to have a complete tear of your ACL because the surgery repairs it better than it is to have a grade two, because that would take longer sometimes to rehabilitate. There are guys coming back from ACLs in 9 months. That's complete tears of ACL in 9 months, which is absolutely out of control. Good. Adrian Peterson being one of them, and I believe even Russell Westbrook had something similar. Rajon Rondo in basketball, if you know those names. All right, anyways, moving on to slide number five as we talk about ACL injury. What do you know? Yeah, the most common ligaments that are sprained are in the ankle, but the ACL is a close second. And an ACL injury is the most common sports-related injury of the knee, not of the entire body, as the ankle is more common. But mechanisms of injury is typically deceleration of the body combined with a twisting, pivoting, or overstepping where an extension of the knee occurs. Yeah, so twisting, pivoting, a lateral deviation of the knee joint can definitely injure the ACL. Mine was on a hyperextension or overstepping, yeah, hyperextended movement. But yeah, ACL prevents the knee from displacing in all directions, more or less, and specifically hyperextension. All right, MCL is also in the knee. That is MCL injuries to the medial side of the knee. Basically, you have an impact to the outer side of the knee, or the knee caves inward during an athletic event, and it is common when you injure the MCL to have ACL or medial meniscal injuries as well. All right, let's move on to slide number six. When we talk about overuse injuries are probably one of the more important things to understand as a personal trainer, because when a person goes to the gym often and they don't work with a personal trainer and they don't have much exercise programming experience, they typically create minor pains throughout their body because of imbalanced fitness or workout programs. So that's typically what I see most common as far as overuse. This is a great example is college-age males that want to gain muscle, bench press too much, and then they end up with a shoulder pain and or elbow pain because of the positioning of the shoulders, as opposed to effectively working out the upper body in which you create balance and don't have that those protracted shoulders show up as a muscle imbalance. Overuse, the other things like overuse are, include things like tendonitis, which is inflammation of the tendon, bursitis, inflammation of the bursa in the joint, due to acute trauma, repetitive stress, muscle imbalance, or muscle tightness on top of the bursa. I haven't experienced any bursal issues or bursitis, and actually don't have any. I realize I haven't had any clients that experienced that, but definitely out there. Tendonitis is definitely more common. Fasciitis is more common, but they say bursitis is most common in the shoulders, hips, and knees. And fasciitis is inflammation of the connective tissue or the fascia, and typically it's most common in the bottom of the foot, which is the plantar fascia. And so plantar fasciitis is very common, especially in runners or certain sports like basketball, very, very common. All right, and for that, actually I'm doing this right now, but roll your foot on a golf ball to reduce plantar fasciitis. I'm doing that right now. Cheers. While I lecture, it's great. I'm working out right now, guys. Anyways, moving over to slide number 7. We'll say I'm working on my mobility right now. That's what we'll say. Page slide number 7, as we talk about cartilage damage. So cartilage damage is, there's a lots of different areas of the, or all joints pretty much have cartilage. So cartilage damage is typical more in the knees and larger supportive structures, knees and hips. What is some of the types of cartilage? You have hyaline cartilage, which covers the bone. You have meniscal cartilage, which are shock absorbers. There's a meniscus in the knee. Meniscal injuries are one of the more common knee injuries along with ACL injuries. And a combination of loading and twisting of the joint and does occur once again with ACL or MCL injuries. The role of the meniscus is a shock absorption, stability, and joint congruency. When you extend your knee and kind of lock your knees straight, there's a nice little fit there that the meniscus has. And that's what allows you to kind of lock your legs straight and, you know, lean on them easily. Lubrication and proprioception is also a role of the meniscus. Sometimes you have stiffness, clicking, or popping with weight-bearing activities. If it's giving way, catching, and locking, that would be an indication of a damaged meniscus. You also have chondromalacia. It's softening or wearing away of the cartilage behind the patella, resulting in inflammation and pain. Basically caused by the posterior surface of the patella not properly tracking in the femoral groove. Basically, you need to ensure the patella is tracking effectively by, if it's a lateral track of the patella, then femoral stretch that vastus lateralis and IT band and strengthen the vastus medialis, which is the medial quadricep. There's some programs out there hopefully you can find for that, but research that if that's something that's currently happening. Anyways, now we're getting into more of the injuries, very specific injuries that, or we'll say injuries that are maybe a little less common, but as a personal trainer, just be aware of what these are for sure. Bone fractures. Most often when people come to you with bone fractures, you're not going to be exercising that area, definitely. But things like a stress fracture, which is a minor fracture due to low impact trauma or repeated microtraumas to a bone region. Runners can sometimes get stress fractures, basketball players for sure that are constantly running. That gets commonly confused with shin splints. So be aware that there is the potential for a stress fracture if somebody complains of shin splint like pain. Signs and symptoms include progressive pain that's worsened with weight-bearing activity and the focal pain and pain at rest and local swelling. High-impact traumas are also could create fractures like car accidents or high-impact sports. Breaking the collarbone is very common in contact sports, whether it be soccer, contacting someone, or football, things like that. That's why their shoulder pads are really important in football. Disabling and requiring immediate medical attention when you do fracture a bone or break a bone. All right. Now we're going to talk about the reaction to any of these injuries as far as the healing process. So the healing process is basically broken down into three different phases. First phase is going to be the inflammatory phase, and you guys have probably all experienced this when you hurt an area and their immediate swelling begins. Swelling is inflammation. Inflammation is basically pain, redness, swelling, warmth, loss of function. Basically, it's the body's initial reaction to a damaged area. But it can last up to 6 days and immobilize the injured area, and also increases blood flow and brings oxygen to help rebuild the tissue there. And after the inflammatory phase, you move into the fibroblastic proliferation phase, or the next step of the healing process, which basically begins at about 3 days, lasts about 21 days, in which all of the damaged tissue begins to fill with scar tissue, or the wound fills with collagen and other cells eventually to form a scar. This happens on the interior tissues as well as the skin. Then you have finally the maturation phase or the maturation. Yeah, maturation, I think that sounds better. Or the remodeling phase. So what happens is that after the day 21, when all of the scar tissue has formed, usually it is different in different areas of the body. Ligaments do take much longer to go through this whole process. But at the remodeling phase, which after 21 days or so, but can last up to 2 years in certain tissues, like I mentioned, the certain ligaments, ACLs, MCLs, all that stuff. What is happening? They're remodeling the scar. They're continuing to build the scar. They're continuing to rebuild the bone, and they're strengthening the tissue around the damaged area. This is what creates scar tissue, and scar tissue can sometimes be problematic as far as pain goes, as far as flexibility goes. So always be aware that when somebody does have an injury to a certain area, decreased flexibility is common because of that extra scar tissue. All right, let's move on to slide number 10, or as we talk about managing injuries. So when we're working out with people, I'm going to tell you my most important tip regarding injuries and or pain. Any time that somebody has pain as a personal trainer, during an exercise and you're the personal trainer, you probably want to avoid that exercise. Any pain, and we're talking sharp pain, not muscular fatigue, we're talking about pain, and specifically sharp pain, I don't let my clients have any pain anytime. It's called my zero tolerance policy. If somebody has a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of pain in their back while we're squatting, we're not squatting that day. Okay, we're going to focus on flexibility to ensure that back can be usable with zero pain before we continue. Okay, that's my tip for you, which is called the zero tolerance policy, and it really will protect your clients best. Okay, managing injuries, they talk about pre-existing injuries. Are they ready for exercise? How long have they been healing through that injury, and how much pain is associated with that injury still? And then do they need to be cleared by a medical professional, meaning if they broke a bone, when can they exercise? Is it cleared by their doctor? If you jump in and start exercising with someone that's not quite done in the remodeling phase and they hurt themselves further, the bone maintains its fracture, doesn't heal, that's on you. So always get a doctor's release before continuing with a client like that. You can modify the program. Remember, if something irritates that injury of the client, change the exercise, do something that doesn't. There's lots of different ways to work on each body part, but if everything hurts, then maybe just avoid that body part for the time being. Acute injury management, this is your RICE. We do want you to know what RICE stands for. It's rest, ice, compress, and elevate. Pretty simple there. Just literally do those things from an immediate injury. Let's say a client drops a weight on their foot, that RICE would be what you do. If a client sprains their ankle or something like that, go to RICE. All right. Flexibility and musculoskeletal injuries. So basically, we're looking at contraindications to consider for injury prevention. Just keep in mind that joint swelling is going to affect any workouts, obviously. And you would not want to work out with someone that joint, especially that has swelling still in that joint. Osteoporosis and rheumatoid arthritis. Be aware of the issues associated with those and make sure that if they do have those in certain parts of the body or the entire body, monitor that based on the guidelines given in the previous chapter. Or if they have a history of corticosteroid use, prescribed or not, keep in mind that that can affect exercises. And the final one is fracture at the fracture site that is healing. Definitely don't want to exercise that area. So yeah, just be aware. Don't exercise if those contraindications are present. All right, now we're moving on to upper extremity injuries. Specifically, we're talking about just basically what injuries can occur to the upper body. So we're looking at probably the more common things of a shoulder injury. So you have to modify overhead activities to an acceptable percentage of range of motion. Basically, my whole point is if it hurts, don't do it. Modify the exercise to where it doesn't hurt. Prevent impingement of the shoulder structures. So if they have a rounding of the shoulders, remember that's what impingement syndrome comes from. And you want to make sure that you don't push or that you don't... the way you can tell that if somebody has a impingement in the shoulder is if when they try to push overhead, they can't get their hands by their ears and the arms kind of fall forward or they have to lean back in order to push vertically. That's the way that I tell. But shoulder strains or sprains to the ligament, strains to the shoulder muscles are common. Rotator cuff injuries, very common. You definitely want to immobilize for 6 to 8 weeks and then obtain exercise guidelines from a from a physical therapist. Remember, around injuries, typically you're not the primary caregiver, so always have those releases and or guidelines given by someone else that is in their line of work. Elbow tendonitis is also common. Tennis elbow you'll hear, golfer's elbow you'll hear, lateral and medial epicondylitis. Avoid high repetition activities. Stretch the triceps and biceps muscle to assist with that. Even the shoulder or make the shoulder complex more flexible as well can help. Carpal tunnel syndrome, repetitive wrist and finger flexion. That's kind of what it's from. Flexor tendons are strained and it's a narrowing of the carpal tunnel due to inflammation, which compresses the median nerve and causes pain and a lack of grip strength and is more common in females. Those are the main upper extremity injuries that they talk about. And then lower extremity injuries, we have a good amount, plenty. we'll go over them. Basically, we just want you to kind of be aware of them. You could read a little bit more about them in the book if you do have them or know of a client that has them. But pes cavus, which is going to be high arches, excessively high arches. My wife has pes cavus, and she had to use an orthotic insert to run track and field. Pes planus, which is flat feet. Pretty simple there. Flat feet, I've worked with a few clients like that. A lot of times it's just the pronation of the foot that makes it look like flat feet. So just be aware of the difference. And then you have greater trochanter bursitis. Yeah, just a great big word there for something that you probably won't see too often, if at all. But it's painful inflammation of the greater trochanter bursa or trochanteric bursa. It's common in female runners, cross-country skiers, and ballet dancers. Remember, guys, most of the time, this type of injury or pain would be diagnosed by a doctor in order for you to know that it's greater trochanter bursitis. Okay? Some signs and symptoms are going to be walking with a limp because of the pain, myofascial tightness, and decreased muscular strength. This type of client may benefit from aquatic exercise as a sample there for you. Moving to furthermore with lower extremity injuries, slide number 14. It is important. We do want you to understand that replacing the athletic footwear is going to most often show up on the test as well as need to be understood by the trainer. I'm even guilty of having my shoes go a little bit too long. I'll wear them for a year sometimes because they're comfy still, but cushioning and proper use and tread, it's very important to replace your athletic footwear. Replace them after 3 to 6 months of use or 300 to 350 to 500 miles. The example on the test would probably be in kilometers at around 560 to 800. And then also look for uneven wearing of the shoe, meaning the one side of the shoe is worn harder, and then analyze the person's jog or gait to determine if that's fixable due to tight muscles. All right, IT band syndrome. This one is more common. I've seen this in runners. Worked with a female that has had this. One of the most important things for IT band syndrome, you definitely want to understand that you as a personal trainer can teach a client with the IT band syndrome how to foam roll their IT band. That is your job as a personal trainer. It is within your scope of practice. You are allowed to teach a client how to foam roll their IT band. IT band syndrome is due to repetitive overuse. Typically, it's the example I gave in previous chapters about someone trying to train for a marathon. So they just continue to run more, run more, run more, run more without switching up their program. And eventually they just end up with an injury like IT band syndrome. So this IT band syndrome occurs when the distal portion of the IT band rubs against the lateral femoral epicondyle, so the side of the knee the IT band is rubbing against. Definitely caused by training errors in running, runners, cyclists, volleyball players, and weightlifters, and more or less overtraining, improper footwear or equipment use, and changes in running surface, muscle imbalances, or structural anomalies. And or failure to stretch correctly. So a lot of issues that can cause IT band syndrome there, but kind of listing them all there for you. Anyways, patellofemoral pain syndrome is next. I do want you to know this one, probably the most out of the chapter for as far as injury goes. The patellofemoral pain syndrome is known as runner's knee, and it's very common with people looking that run a lot as well, specifically due to tightness in the hip flexors and quadriceps, typically. It's anterior knee pain, so front of the knee pain. It is commonly confused with chondromalacia, which is also knee pain. And 16 to 25% of all running injuries are going to be PFP syndrome, or PFPS. So what do you want to do? Work on flexibility of the muscles that support the knee, specifically the quadriceps, hip flexor combo, hamstrings, inner thighs, calves, all of that. And then also focus on closed chain exercises like squats and lunges can be very beneficial for PFP syndrome. Okay. Sounds good there. Perfect. So let's go ahead and slide on over. Oh yeah, those two are important for the test. I guess that's what I mainly want to say is that for PFP syndrome, work on flexibility for all the muscles of the knee, and then focus on closed chain exercises, definitely. All right, lower extremity injuries continued as we move to slide 15 and we talk about infrapatellar tendonitis. This is going to be jumper's knee. It's inflammation of the patellar tendon below the kneecap. Very common in jumping sports, basketball, volleyball, track and field. And management of this is going to avoid the activities that are currently causing it. So the sports that they're playing are typically going to continue to aggravate it, so they may need to take time off. Plyometrics, sitting for long periods of time, deep squats and running could also aggravate it. Definitely modify the training variables, meaning switch up the training program. If someone's just constantly running, have them switch it up to some exercise of some sort. And also ice and heat it. Also for this, definitely I had a female that had this. Every time she walked upstairs, her knee hurt like really bad. Every time she hiked, it hurt really bad. We focused on foam rolling and stretching the quadriceps and hip flexors, and it was literally gone in a month to 2 months, completely gone. Won't happen to everyone, but definitely that's one of the major causes is tight quadriceps, tight hip flexors, and also weak glutes that aren't counteracting appropriately. All right, moving to slide number 16 as we talk about shin splints. Shin splints are the scientific word for it is going to be medial stress syndrome or posterior shin splints. Inflammation to the posterior tibialis muscle. It's associated with pes planus, which is flattened feet, triggered by a sudden change in activity, periosteus or inflammation of the bone, more or less, periosteum. Runners, dancers, military personnel that walk a lot, run a lot, use specific foot movements a lot are at higher risk. And then anterior shin splints, the tibialis anterior, extensor digitorum longus and other extensors of the foot. And yeah, that's inflammation to those muscles. All right, ankle sprains, mechanism of injury to the lateral structures. Typically, yeah, more common, the most common ankle sprain, and this is probably the most common sprain in the body, is a lateral ankle sprain, in which you the outer side of the foot tucks underneath and goes medial, or the foot inverts or supinates. Is another word for it. And when you roll your ankle, that's the outer edge of the foot kind of tucking inward. I'm sure you've all done that at one point or another, whether it be a major or a minor sprain, but that's 85% of all ankle injuries are to the lateral ankle structures of the ankle. And me just thinking, pretty funny, in the last year, I've had two medial ankle sprains, which just because when I surf specifically, there's different movements that are less common to ground sports, but my foot basically went outward and injured the medial structures, medial ligaments of my ankle, which is very uncommon, but in 1 year I did it to both ankles, so I'm almost completely recovered from the second one. So that's just funny that 85% of them are to the lateral side, but mine ended up both being medial, which is very uncommon. But I guess in certain sports, the medial side might be more common, so always be aware. But yeah, medial ankle sprains, that's the one word I was just talking about for myself. That's eversion, very rare, but the mechanism is a forced dorsiflexion and eversion of the ankle. So it's basically your big toe laterally or rotating laterally and then being forced upward and away, superior and laterally. That's mine was actually just my... ankle rotated laterally and my shin stayed in the same spot. So those ligamentous structures of the medial ankle became aggravated for sure. All right, moving on to slide number 17 as we talk about Achilles tendonitis. Achilles tendonitis is basically inflammation of the Achilles tendon. It's an inflammatory condition to the tendons of the calf muscle group or the soleus and gastrocnemius. The Achilles tendon is the one on your ankle. That you can grab right now. It's a wiry, big one. Very common in runners, gymnasts, dancers, soccer, track and field, volleyball. Common in basketball. I believe Kobe Bryant was suffering from Achilles tendonitis for a bit, as well as plantar fasciitis, which is the next one. And plantar fasciitis is inflammation to the fascia on the bottom of the foot. It's most common cause of heel pain and heel spur formation. Heel spurs are like bone spurs in the heel and accounts for 10% of running pain. But like I'm doing right now, still take a golf ball, step on it, stand on it, and roll the entire bottom of the foot fascia if you do have pain in the morning when you hop out of bed and you step down and you have pain immediately. That's typically plantar fasciitis. By the foot spreading and that plantar fascia being irritated. Okay, but intrinsic factors include pes planus and pes cavus for plantar fasciitis. Flattening of the foot or high arches can increase plantar fasciitis. And extrinsic factors are overtraining or improper footwear, obesity, bad surfaces that you're running on, like cement or something. Right, which is different than asphalt and other track surfaces. But finally, we're going to finish off with record keeping, just a fun little blurb at the end of this chapter. You want to always be keeping track of all of your clients' information, including their medical history, what their previous conditions are, what their current conditions are, how you're monitoring and managing those conditions associated with exercise, their exercise record, document all workouts, what are they doing, what are the programs they've been doing, and are there any new areas of pain that have been brought up? Incident report, if something happens, like an injury while you're working with them, you do need to fill out a formal written account of the incident that will be used in a court of law if it was to go to your company being sued, the gym that you're at being sued. A first-hand account written down cannot be changed, so it's important that you do that to describe exactly what happened so the fairest outcome can be considered. And then also, guys, always or keep correspondence with HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A, or Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And yeah, keep all communication with the client confidential, meaning if they share anything with you about their medical information, do not share that with others, and lock it in a file cabinet. Winky smiley from a previous chapter. All right, that's going to get us through chapter 15. Only three more chapters to go, guys. But I do want you to complete the audiobook lecture down below, as well as the assignment. Not too many questions on the assignment because it's not as focused on the test. But definitely complete that. Take the quiz, kick some butt, and we will keep on keeping on. Keep on trekking. Keep on pushing. All right. Anyways, do all that, and I look forward to seeing you in the audio lectures below. Cheers.